Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents We Rise Again by Martha Carr and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Amanda Friday. Chapter 1.
I think I've found something.
Dr. Igor Semyonov readjusted the thin, frameless glasses on his face and blinked furiously, trying to keep his gaze centered on his work, laid out on the small, round kitchen table before him. It was a lot harder than he anticipated. It had been since the first day his unexpected, uninvited, and thoroughly unwanted guest had first shown up in the scientist's small, cramped apartment on the outskirts of downtown Moscow. He scanned the jumble of blueprints, plans, scribbled notes, hastily contrived possibilities, and results of various test runs. Semyonov couldn't hear his guest moving around in his apartment. The tall, slender, bald man, with more power in his little finger than Semyonov knew existed in one being, was eerily silent. He moved in a fluid, floating motion with soundless footsteps, but his presence was enough to alert anyone to his movements. Not necessarily to his mood, however, which the scientist couldn't read or predict, like the work Semyonov was trying to complete while essentially being held captive in his home.
I traded one prison in the custody of the Russian military for another prison in my home. My jailer is now someone I can't fathom fighting off. At this point, I think I might have preferred working for the military.
Through no fault of his own, the Russian military had conscripted Dr. Semyonov for secret work on a private energy weapon they could not explain. They also couldn't offer Semyonov the means to complete his directive. This man calling himself Hekka was interested enough to join the scientist at his kitchen table under the dim, low-hanging lamp above its center. Semyonov had come to loathe and fear the man in equal measure since falling into his employ by force a few weeks ago. A wave of goosebumps rose on Semyonov's flesh when Hekka stopped a foot behind and to his right. He felt his unwanted guest looming over his shoulder, not making a sound, asking any questions, or otherwise proving his existence in this tiny, stuffy apartment. The tall man had lurked within Semyonov's home for weeks. He had spent half the time hovering over the scientist's shoulder, standing perfectly still in the center of the small living room, or sitting cross-legged at the mouth of the hallway, leading into the apartment's two tiny bedrooms. The other half of the time, Hekka was gone. That was how it seemed to Semyonov, who could find neither visual nor physical proof of his guest's presence in his home during those times. Still, Semyonov thought Hekka was always present, even when he did not make his presence known to the scientist. More than anything else, that had kept Semyonov from fully weighing his options when it came to working for this man. Truthfully, he had no options, because he no longer had the privacy usually afforded by his home. Nor did he have the freedom to utilize his time the way he would have had anyone else come to find him and enlist his specialized skill set and experience for work like this. The only way out of it, for him and his daughter Nadia, was to keep going until he accomplished what Hekka required. The one positive aspect of this entire arrangement was that it was already clear what Hekka required of him, and Semyonov had been working almost non-stop to achieve the goal. He felt he had now come as close as possible to accomplishing it with the supplies and resources at his disposal. Those had been vastly improved upon since Hekka and his right-hand man first appeared in Semyonov's apartment. All the resources in the world could not create a new form of energy, the likes of which Semyonov had not seen in his illustrious career, before old age and the taxing responsibilities of life had pulled him away from his work to focus on other things, more important things, things for which he would never forgive himself should he fail in his task now. So far, Nadia did not know about this particular arrangement, and Semyonov would do everything in his power to ensure that remained the case, even if that meant standing here with an inexplicably powerful man looming behind him. Semyonov felt like multiple gun barrels pressed against his back, despite the complete lack of weaponry and threats. Semyonov's employer now needed neither to get the scientist to do what he wanted. Hekka had everything he required in this tiny apartment. The only thing that could make Semyonov abandon all attempts at autonomy and all desire to fight for his freedom was down that narrow hallway in the back. For now, she slept soundly. By now, Semyonov understood that a quick, silent approach by Hekka and the terrifying weight of his presence meant only one thing. Hekka was interested in whatever Semyonov claimed he'd discovered. The tall man expected to be made aware of these discoveries with as much brevity and simplicity as possible. Semyonov had not gone through decades of intense schooling, multiple engineering degrees, and countless sleepless nights during his younger years to slave away at his kitchen table and dumb down his findings for this. From the beginning, it was the most useless and impossible piece of work he had ever been directed to engage with. Amazing what the smallest amount of the right kind of pressure could produce when placed in the right location at the right angle. Now the scientist was a hard-working prisoner, eager to please his jailer and willing to stoop to the basest forms of communicating his findings, because that was what Hekka expected of him. Fortunately, he had visual cues and tangible proof to convey his latest discovery, and hoped that would be enough for his employer. Semyonov explained,
"I was not able to discern any of this until these pieces of machine were brought to me. They caught my attention due to the various markings I found in the smaller handful of pieces back at the lab."
He gathered the pieces in question, various fragments from the destroyed, disassembled, and allegedly once-operational weapon the Russian military had brought him. The machine was made of the regular components of most military-grade weapons, armored steel and state-of-the-art materials intended for ease of use, effectiveness, and low likelihood of malfunction. That had been the major obstacle to Semyonov's discovery of anything his current or previous employer might have considered headway on this project. Semyonov could not for the life of him discover where this new weapon's energy source had come from, what it was made of, or how it was created or captured and maintained to form such a disastrously powerful mechanism. He hoped this small discovery would lead to new information that would enable him to complete this project. Otherwise, the scientist would live out the rest of his days in an endless purgatory of fear and tightening pressure that he knew all too well.
"They were merely fragments when I saw them before."
He pointed at various smaller pieces that came straight from the highly secured secret laboratories within the Russian government's military Ministry of Defense building in Moscow. Semyonov could question how they arrived at his home and why his new employer was so confident the scientist could aid him in this pursuit. However, doing so would propel him closer to his demise. Semyonov didn't need to be an expert in national history to understand how the motherland worked. He pointed from one item to the next, strewn across his small kitchen table that had been overflowing with plans, paperwork, and weapons parts for the better part of 2 weeks.
"I noted their existence. None of them made sense at the time. But what I have found today convinces me that I needed all the pieces together in one place instead of only a fraction."
Hekka provided no comment or permission for the scientist to continue describing his potentially revelatory find. That was enough for Semyonov to believe the tall man was still interested, and would remain so until Semyonov finished his summary report, or Hekka decided he was a waste of time and was worth the extra effort it would take to dispose of him prematurely. Semyonov continued,
"I wasn't looking for this during any part of this project. The military didn't seem interested in the minor details of how these pieces fit together beyond forcing me to make it work. That was as specific as their goal got. I have more of the pieces now, thanks to you, I suppose. This is quite interesting."
A slight tremble in the scientist's voice betrayed his nervousness, and he cursed himself for being unable to prevent it. Even when he was confident this newest find would lead his employer closer to the information Hekka wanted. Fortunately, Semyonov's fingers did not tremble as he reached across the table to gather several smaller pieces of metal that had constituted this huge, strangely put-together weapon. Exterior of a control panel, or so Semyonov assumed.
See here. When I put these segments together, the markings I'd previously ignored have their place. Putting together a weapon as systematically destroyed as this was like putting together a puzzle. I never expected to be playing with puzzles that put someone's life on the line beyond mine. It took me some time to discern which pieces belonged to which markings. Several components of this weapon were stamped with the same symbols. There was a lot of trial and error, but I believe I have found one complete marking that might be particularly useful in discovering how this weapon was created.
Semyonov finished fumbling with all the separate pieces of the control panel's exterior, which were much thinner than most of the destroyed weapon's parts. He worked quickly to put all the pieces together, held them in place for a moment, then stepped back to get a fuller view. He almost stepped into the tall man standing behind him. With a start and a gasp of surprise, Semyonov corrected his step and moved to the side to offer Hekka a better view of his findings.
This, right here, is the first bit of headway I have been able to make since all this began.
Both men stared at the pieced-together remnants. Hekka's response was to slowly tilt his head by a few degrees and say nothing.
Wonderful. All this. And either I'm going to have to explain it, or he's going to think I've been jerking him around this whole time. Right there, in the center of these pieces,
Semyonov pointed,
this mark here. I have seen portions of it several times on other fragments of the weapon's machinery. This is the first time I've completed it, and I believe this will lead us straight to the answers we're looking for.
When Hekka said nothing and didn't move, the scientist swallowed thickly again, cleared his throat, and dove into further explanation until ordered otherwise.
This is a manufacturer's stamp, or that is as close to the truth as a weapon like this could have, because the manufacturer is not a reliable source of weaponry, mechanics, or both, in any sense of the profession. I'm more inclined to believe this stamp belongs to an underground organization, perhaps some rebel guerrilla force or criminal organization. They pride themselves on manufacturing weapons that have never been seen as far as I can tell. Nothing above board. Whoever this stamp belongs to, whoever we're looking for, will take a bit to find, mostly because, as I'm sure you can understand, they probably don't want to be found. Not that this manufacturer's stamp would be registered and in the official database in the world. If we can trace the stamp's owner, we can find the real geniuses behind this weapon. Then you will have access to all their knowledge without anyone needing to put the pieces together all over again.
A small, tense laugh escaped the scientist. None of this was funny. Not a bit of his current situation amused him, nor did he like the prospect of subjecting even a criminal organization to the scrutiny and nail-biting terror of working for someone like Hekka, willingly or otherwise. The laugh was more in relief, because Semyonov's opportunity to get out from under the weight of his unwilling service to the tall man lifted a little. Now that he had found something as obvious and helpful as a manufacturer's mark, all the hours he had spent dreading his present and future seemed a complete waste. If only he had searched for something like this from the beginning, he could have relieved himself of these unwanted responsibilities much sooner. Hopefully, finding whoever this manufacturer's stamp belonged to would not require anywhere near as much time as recreating this weapon. Whoever they were, they had already done it once. Semyonov didn't have proof of success, but this weapon must have worked, if the Russian military and Hekka wanted it rebuilt so badly that they threatened the lives of an esteemed scientist and his daughter. When Hekka still said nothing, Semyonov repeated himself, in case the tall man had been preoccupied during his previous explanation and needed a reminder of their next steps.
"The owner of this manufacturer's stamp,"
he stated matter-of-factly, sounding much more confident than he felt.
"This is who you are looking for. Once you find the person or organization this mark belongs to, you will have the actual creators of your machine at your fingertips. I would be completely baffled if they told you that replicating this device to the same or modified specifications is impossible. They should be able to do whatever you're looking for. They know much more about this energy source than I ever could."
Hekka did not show any sign of excitement or understanding of the details and ramifications of Semyonov's discovery. The tall man said nothing. He did not move. He did not turn to look at the scientist he had held hostage in the man's home for the last several weeks.
"That must not have been what he wanted to hear,"
Semyonov thought.
"Now I'm going to find out exactly how I failed, aren't I?"
He had a defense already on his lips that there was no more he could do in recreating the power source for this weapon. He had no experience or expertise in this never-before-seen type of mechanical or weaponized engineering. Putting together this manufacturer's stamp was more success than he hoped to achieve during this project under the military's oversight, or Hekka's. Semyonov was about to blurt out all these points, potentially with an extra bumbling plea for Hekka to spare his and Nadia's lives. He stopped immediately when the tall man lifted one hand and pointed a long, slender index finger at the completed puzzle of the manufacturer's stamp etched into the metal.
"The mark of those who created this weapon,"
Hekka echoed. It wasn't a question, but something told Semyonov the tall man was still curious and patient enough to receive further explanation or confirmation that Hekka had understood the scientist correctly.
"Yes, sir."
He felt like a fool for calling him sir, but did not dare to address him by name.
"This symbol belongs to the manufacturer. When you find who that manufacturer is, you will also find the most qualified people to recreate this machine for you."
This time, when Hekka moved, it was only to turn his head toward Semyonov. A tingling wave of cold horror, and something like disgust, overwhelmed the scientist at the realization that he was the center of the man's attention and under intense scrutiny from those black eyes. Semyonov couldn't move. No matter how hard he tried, he could not remove his gaze from Hekka's, the way he previously had not been able to remove his gaze from the life-threatening works scattered across his kitchen table.
"How do we accomplish this?"
Hekka asked. His words were slow and deliberate, rolling out in a low tone that simultaneously sounded like complete apathy and an intense warning of potential rage. Finally, Semyonov ripped his gaze away and pointedly focused it on the metal pieces instead. Then he stuck both hands on his hips, briefly thanked whatever higher powers existed that he was still breathing, and managed a half-hearted shrug that got across the relative notion of informal apathy. He was anything but apathetic or casual. Still, he took a brief moment to congratulate himself for playing it off so convincingly. It would have been convincing if he were speaking to anyone but the powerful stranger who had broken into his home and turned him into an unwilling accomplice and prisoner all in one go.
"Well, it will be more complicated than the normal route of getting in touch with any other manufacturer of any other goods such as this,"
Semyonov replied.
"It's not like this organization would have information readily available for anyone who seeks them out. Unfortunately, I don't possess the requisite knowledge to retrieve such information and contact black market weapons manufacturers and dealers. One would theoretically need to create a scenario where these manufacturers wanted to make themselves known and available. In your case, sir, a scenario that was tempting and tantalizing enough for these individuals or organizations to come to you. Pique their interest. Provide the most direct route to contact you. Then sit back and let them mull it over. With an offer such as one I'm sure you could provide, anyone worth their salt in this industry would quickly and easily become invested in exploring things further.
Semyonov ran out of words. He was acutely aware of how silent his apartment was when he wasn't talking to cover his bases, working to avoid being snuffed off the face of the earth or endangering Nadia's well-being any further. Assuming Hekka wanted more information, the scientist took another sharp breath and added,
"Unfortunately, I don't quite know what this scenario would be, sir. I have a regrettable lack of experience strategizing such things from the ground up. If you require a jumping-off point, I'm sure I could manage something for you to work from, if perhaps I had a starting point or more information on what you would like to."
He stopped when Hekka's hand opened into a mostly flat palm, which he raised toward the scientist in a clear order to stop talking.
"This I know how to accomplish," Hekka replied. "It is the same as it has always been."
Semyonov chewed on the inside of his lower lip as he watched warily, waiting for another question, or perhaps another statement of his new employer's abilities, incredibly vague and offering nothing Semyonov could use to further his participation in this project's next step. After a devastatingly long moment of waiting in silence for his new employer to say something else, the scientist finally opened his mouth again.
"That is good news. I would appreciate knowing if there is anything more you require of me before—"
"There will be,"
Hekka drawled, his bored but bordering on furious tone unchanging.
"I will design this scenario of yours, Doctor, and you will await further instruction."
"Ah, yes,"
Semyonov nodded, blinking furiously to keep the oncoming tears of crushed hope at bay.
"Would you be able to tell me how much longer I will—"
His words cut off abruptly at the incomprehensible sight of what happened before him. One moment, Hekka stood at the table's edge, scanning Semyonov's work and results. The next second, a flaring ring of purple light streaked with silver appeared in the air, nearly blotting out the sight of the eerily powerful stranger. It morphed into tumultuous clouds around him, like a miniature storm. At first, it looked like Hekka took a single step forward. If he had done that, he would have knocked against the table. It would have stopped anyone else, but most likely sent the piece of furniture flying across the small living room. That was what Semyonov would have expected anyway, after what little he had seen of the man's capabilities. Instead, Hekka disappeared. The storm clouds quickly followed. Semyonov was alone, standing over the culmination of all the tedious work for this particular project he still did not understand. The scientist stood still for the next several seconds, not daring to show any indication that he had noticed his employer vanish between strides. Then the sensation of foreboding, intense pressure, and overwhelming terror that threatened to crumble his remaining reserve and composure deflated like a popped balloon.
"He's gone. He is truly gone. If only I knew for how long, I could do something."
This wasn't the first time the scientist had considered trying to sneak away from his home, where Hekka expected him to be day in and day out. Hekka also expected Semyonov to continuously work on this weapon project, whether that threatened to kill the one man Hekka had found who could help guide him in the right direction. If Igor Semyonov had lived alone as a senior citizen in the final stages of a long life that should have provided more luxury and comfort than he had, he would have attempted to escape a long time ago. It was not only him anymore. Nadia depended on him. She had depended on him for the last 8 years. While Semyonov sometimes wished he did not have to shoulder the burden of physically and emotionally caring for his adult daughter, He was well aware of the frustration and helplessness she must have felt over the last 8 years. Nadia never complained or lost her composure within the depths of her illness that would have filled most others with complete and crippling despair. She hadn't given up hope either. It might have been the only thing that kept Semyon off going, even through this heinous situation of being made a prisoner in his home and answering to someone who could disappear into thin air on a whim. Hekka had said he would have more use for Dr. Semyonov in the future. If the scientist attempted to escape and made it out of his apartment, Moscow, or maybe out of Russia with Nadia, there was no telling how far Hekka would go to retrieve his prisoner, nor how long he would pour his resources into finding and apprehending Semyonov and Nadia. No, he had to wait until this entire thing was finished. That man, Paladino, had mentioned a clear-cut and pre-existing solution to the largest of Semyonov's problems, should he agree to continue working for Hekka in this capacity. The offer of money from the Russian government had been enough to make Semyonov willing to work for them. It wasn't an incredibly large fortune, but it would have been enough for Semyonov to afford the type of care and experimental treatment Nadia needed. He would never see a ruble of that agreed-upon payment now. The promise that a cure existed for his daughter was better than any sum of monetary compensation from the Russian military. This was the only thing Semyonov cared about now. It was the only thing keeping his feet planted and his mind from wandering into all kinds of outlandish, potentially dangerous fantasies of how he might get out from under this. When it was his daughter's life on the line, no matter how old she was, he would do whatever it took to ensure no further harm came to her. Dr. Igor Semyonov could not shake the feeling that what he was doing for Hekka was more dangerous than anything he could have accomplished for the Russians or any nation's military. Most likely, this was more dangerous for Russia as a whole. That still was not enough of a potential threat to make him change his mind. Chapter 2 Hekka roamed the streets of Moscow, his long, slow strides taking him quickly through narrow streets between high-rise buildings. He passed several apartment buildings and small, cobbled-together shops within the concrete jungle the city had made for its less well-off denizens. Everywhere he looked were humans, the poor, the hungry, the hopeless, the sick, and the dying. The perpetually delusional, who believed they could change their fates by scrambling as hard as possible for the next small, insignificant checkpoint on the laughably short length of their lifespan. All around him was desperation. All around him was a collection of the fuel Hekka would have consumed right there if all he had wanted was to repeat the conquest. So much had changed between then and now. So many centuries he had spent in prison underground over millennia. All the while, humanity had done what it always did to the world, to its villages, towns, cities, countries, and continents. Humanity had only continued to grow, spreading like a plague upon the earth. Humans had developed far faster than Hekka could have predicted. Now they could conceptualize and successfully craft a weapon, like the destroyed cannon. Hekka had tracked it from South America after first feeling its energy in the young American soldier who had dared to touch him at that museum. As the god of magic, Hekka understood how creativity, ingenuity, drive, and potential could create something so powerful and new he had never seen or heard of. What he could not do was take this type of magical energy for himself. That American soldier had possessed something entirely new to him. It had no beginning or end. It had no path for Hekka to trace back to its origins, to a part of himself, to the essence of what magic had been in the beginning. It was not what he had allowed it to become, and what he had inevitably transformed it into when he had transformed himself into being so long ago. This new power he had felt from that single human soldier was none of his doing. It had nothing to do with the magic Hekka had first released and shared with the world, which humanity had discovered, utilized, appreciated, revered, taken advantage of, and adulterated throughout the entire age of their existence. This was something completely different. Hekka intended to find which of these humans had created such a power that the god of magic neither recognized nor fully understood it. Once Hekka harnessed this magic, he would have everything he needed for a long, fruitful, unchallenged...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?